5:55 was Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Victor Beatty reporting. European leaders attempt to gain control of the migrant crisis. European Union leaders meeting an emergency session in Brussels early Thursday agreed to provide more than $1 billion to international aid agencies, helping refugees at camps near their home countries. European Council President Donald Tusk warned the potential of millions heading to Europe requires a change in policy.
It is clear that the greatest tide of refugees and migrants is yet to come. Therefore, we need to correct the policy of open doors and windows. Now the focus should be on the proper protection of our external borders and on external assistance to refugees and the countries in our neighborhood.
He said the 28 EU countries have agreed to increase aid to countries like Lebanon, Jordan, and Turkey, which are hosting millions of refugees from war-torn Syria. They also agreed to identify those eligible for refugee protection. Burkina Faso's interim president Wednesday regained control of the country a week after a military general and his supporters overthrew him and his transitional government. Michel Kafando and Prime Minister Yacouba Isaac Zida marked their return to power in an official handover ceremony in the capital, Ouagadougou.
Monsieur President Michel Kafando.
Benin's President Boni Yayi told Mr. Kafando the Economic Community of West African States, known as ECOWAS, recognizes his authority as interim ruler. Last week's coup came less than a month before elections in which supporters of ousted President Blaise Compaoré were barred from running. Mr. Compaoré ruled Burkina Faso for 27 years before being ousted in a popular uprising last year when he tried to change the constitution to extend his presidency. This is VOA News. Pope Francis Thursday will become the first pope to address a joint meeting of the U.S. Congress. Wednesday, on his first full day in the U.S., Francis held a private meeting with President Obama and later celebrated Mass attended by thousands. Catholic University of America theology professor Chad Pecknold says the pope spoke out on a host of controversial issues, including immigration and climate change.
He reminded us that he was a migrant. That was his first issue, immigration. And then he turned to the family and a strong support for the institution of marriage and the family, he said, in these critical times. And then he stressed the issue of religious freedom for individuals and for communities. And then he stressed the theme of care for our common home.
Pecknold says the pope was bundling these issues together because they're designed for the common good. The pope will also visit New York, address the UN General Assembly, and attend a World Family Conference later this week in Philadelphia. The Grand Mufti of Saudi Arabia has called on Muslims worldwide to unite against misguided elements, including extremist groups like the Islamic State that want to take Islam, he said, back to the age of ignorance. Abdulaziz ibn Abdullah al-Sheikh delivered the remarks during his annual sermon to more than 2 million Muslims who had converged on the Valley of Mount Arafat for a day of prayer Wednesday, the annual Hajj pilgrimage. Egypt's President Abdel Fattah el-Sisi Wednesday pardoned dozens of prisoners, including two Al Jazeera journalists. One of them is Canadian Mohamed Fahmy, who was asked what he will do with his newfound freedom.
I will continue fighting for press freedom. I have been working on a charter in the prison cell to introduce to the Egyptian Journalism Syndicate and to the presidency in Egypt to improve press freedoms for both Egyptian journalists and foreign journalists working in Egypt, because I believe there's so much that can be done in order to protect us from prosecution in Egypt.
Fahmy and Bahar Mohamed were sentenced in August to 3 years in prison on charges of fabricating false news in support of the outlawed Muslim Brotherhood, the party of former President Mohamed Morsi. Afghanistan says it's undertaken serious measures to prevent sexual abuse reportedly committed by local police commanders against children. The New York Times report detailed extensive rape and other sexual abuse of young boys at the hands of local Afghan police commanders and U.S.-trained Afghan militia. A Canadian court sentenced two Islamists to life in prison Wednesday for a failed plot to derail a passenger train between Toronto and New York in 2012. Cheheb S. Ghayer, a Tunisian national, and Canadian Raid Jazer were convicted in March for plotting to cut a large hole in a railroad bridge and derail a train. Three New York banks have been ordered by a U.S. court to hand over Sudanese funds to victims of the Al-Qaeda attack in 2000 on the U.S. Navy destroyer USS Cole Warship in the port of Aden. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Bate in Washington. Today is Thursday, September 24th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Pope Francis addresses a joint session of Congress today after a meeting with President Barack Obama yesterday at the White House.
You remind us that in the eyes of God, our measure as individuals and our measure as a society is not determined by wealth or power or station or celebrity, but by how well we hew to Scripture's call to lift up the poor and the marginalized.
That's U.S. President Barack Obama welcoming Pope Francis yesterday. Pope Francis will also address the U.N. General Assembly tomorrow, Friday, in New York. We have a preview. Burkina Faso's deposed interim leader has been reinstated, but issues remain. And Congo-Brazzaville's opposition begins mass protests this Sunday against President Sassou Nguesso's third-term bid.
We want to stop the president. Don't change the constitution. We have to stop him with our people. All the people don't like that the president remains in power. All the people.
Guy Kimfusia Rumi is president of the Union for Democracy and Republican Party in Congo-Brazzaville. South Sudan denies threatening SPLM's Secretary General Pagam Amum and a warning about elephant abuse in African tourist industry. Those stories plus Mark Oldman's sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Pope Francis will address a joint session of the U.S. Congress today, Thursday, in Washington, before leaving for New York City. Yesterday, President Barack Obama warmly welcomed the Pope to the White House. VOA's Jeff Custer reports from Washington, where an estimated 15,000 people were on hand to greet the pontiff.
As dignitaries and guests gathered on the White House South Lawn, the Pope stepped out of the Vatican Embassy in Washington to greet throngs of the faithful and well-wishers. A short time later, the President and Mrs. Obama greeted the pontiff at the White House with a formal welcome. In his remarks, the President told the pontiff that the excitement surrounding his visit to the U.S. was attributable not just to his position as Pope, but to his unique qualities as a person.
You remind us that in the eyes of God, our measure as individuals and our measure as a society is not determined by wealth or power or station or celebrity, but by how well we hew to Scripture's call to lift up the poor and the marginalized.
In his remarks, the Pope echoed the President's words.
American Catholics are committed to building a society which is truly tolerant and inclusive, to safeguarding the rights of individuals and communities, and to rejecting every form of injustice, discrimination.
Pope Francis also weighed in on climate change, saying he was encouraged by Mr. Obama's efforts to curb air pollution.
It seems clear to me also that climate change is a problem we can no longer be left to a future generation.
After the ceremony, Pope Francis and President Obama held one-on-one talks in the president's office. Administration officials say the leaders discussed values they both share. Jeff Custer, VOA News, Washington.
World leaders are about to converge on the United Nations in their largest numbers yet. More than 150 presidents and prime ministers will attend this year's annual General Assembly, which also marks the UN's 70th anniversary. As VOA's Margaret Bashir reports, there will be no shortage of global crises to discuss.
The meetings get underway Friday with a special visit from Pope Francis. He will address leaders in the General Assembly, have a separate meeting with UN staff, and a private session with Secretary General Ban Ki-moon, and then visit New York's Ground Zero. He's also scheduled to say mass at a large indoor arena. The Secretary General has met Francis three times before and says he counts on the Pope's leadership on many critical issues.
We have been discussing many issues, including poverty eradication and migration, refugee issues last time, and most importantly, climate change.
Richard Gowan of Columbia University says leaders will have many daunting subjects to talk about.
There is going to be a lot of self-congratulation about the Iran nuclear deal, but that will be overshadowed by the humanitarian crisis in Europe and the continued power of the Islamic State in the Middle East.
A high-level meeting on the refugee crisis is set for September 30th. The Secretary General says he hopes to mobilize a humane and effective response. The majority of refugees are Syrians, fleeing nearly 5 years of civil war. Russia's recent increase in military support to Syrian President Bashar al-Assad has raised tensions with Washington. President Vladimir Putin, who has not attended a General Assembly in nearly a decade, is coming, and he may bring a new strategy on Syria. But Gowen says it may not be to everyone's liking.
There is a fundamental division with the US and Europeans over Assad and Moscow's continuing support for Assad, and so it's likely to be a diplomatic breakdown rather than a breakthrough.
U.S. Ambassador Samantha Power says President Barack Obama will chair a discussion on countering terrorism.
The president's going to convene a meeting to look at countering violent extremism, to look at what the coalition has achieved and where the gaps are.
This year's General Assembly may be its biggest ever in terms of attendance and challenges. Margaret Bashir, VOA News, the United Nations.
Burkina Faso's transitional civilian president, Michel Kafando, says he's back in charge of the country after being detained and ousted by soldiers 1 week ago. But sources of tension remain. West African leaders were in Burkina Faso on Wednesday to negotiate with military and civilian authorities as protesters condemned any attempt to give amnesty to the coup leaders. Emily Yob reports from Ouagadougou on the challenges ahead.
About 2,000 people gathered on the roadside Wednesday as regional head of state came to shepherd the country's return to the constitutional order. Brandishing signs which read "No amnesty" and "RSP murderers," with RSP referring to the presidential guard, the protesters' message was clear.
Si on donne de l'amnesty à Guinguere, ça veut dire que demain.
One of them said, if we give amnesty to coup leader General Diendéré, that means that tomorrow I can get up and kill my neighbor and then ask for an amnesty. She says this is inadmissible. In Burkina, we don't want that, she says. A deal proposed by ECOWAS on Sunday called for putschists to return power to the transitional civilian authorities in exchange for inclusive elections and an amnesty. General Diendéré has stepped aside, but the question of amnesty remains unsettled, as does the fate of the presidential guards. Prior to the coup, a government commission recommending the RSP be dissolved. The RSP has agreed to remain confined to its barracks, while the army moves back 50 kilometers from Ouagadougou. Army troops had entered Ouagadougou on Tuesday and pressured the RSP to surrender. Burkina Faso was already working to emerge from one crisis when members of the RSP stormed a cabinet meeting last week and took transitional authorities hostage. Since the onset of the crisis, at least 10 people have been killed and more than 100 injured. Elections were slated for October 11th, 1 year after street protests ousted long-term leader Blaise Compaoré. They have now been delayed.
Nous continuons ce que nous avons commencé.
Interim President Kafando says he will continue doing what he was doing, which is getting the electoral process back on track. ECOWAS called for the polls to be inclusive. It is not clear whether the national government will reverse a measure voted on earlier this year that barred members of the ex-ruling party from running. Coup leaders cited that exclusion as a reason for the takeover. Emily Yab for VOA News in Ouagadougou.
A Congo-Brazzaville opposition leader says the people will take to the streets this Sunday to protest President Denis Sassou Nguesso's decision to seek a third term. Guy Kinfusia Romain, president of the Union for Democracy and Republic Party, said Congolese will take a page from Burkina Faso, where civil society and labor unions played a key role in blunting former President Blaise Compaoré's bid to seek a third term. The 71-year-old Sassou Nguesso is banned by the current constitution from seeking another term. On Tuesday this week, he announced a referendum on changes to the constitution that could allow him to run for a third term in the 2016 election. Opposition leader Romain says the people will not accept President Nguesso's third term bid.
He have not to do that because he has finished his time to stay in power. He don't try to remain on power. He have to go out in 76. Is illegal that he want to do. Very illegal.
The president said he wants the people of Congo to decide. He wants to give them a voice. Let them decide if they want him to go out.
The people have not to change constitution. President have been elected with one constitution. If he changes constitution, he have to go out. He have to go out because he have been elected by the constitution he want to change. He don't remain to power.
So the president probably says that he's doing a good job. If he's doing a good job, he wants to stay on to
what
finish the job.
Not good job. He have to go out. Have to do good job. Any president.
The opposition, what do you want to do? Are you going to protest this or what?
We want to stop the president. Don't change the constitution. We have to stop him with our people. All the people don't like that the president remain in power. All the people. The people want president go out in 16.
The president is 72 years old. He's 72 years old.
7 years old and two towers. Twice. He have not to stay three times. I've been in power two times. It's enough for a president. Enough.
Do you know when the parliament is supposed to vote?
The parliament is not good because elections are not good. Parliament then have been chosen by the president. They have not been elected goodly. Constitutional court, not good. All the things not good. President too, not good.
So the parliament supports the president?
Yes, because the parliament have been chosen by the president. Not good election. We are in the same situation as Burkina Faso.
What are you going to do about it? Are you going to protest like in Burkina Faso?
We have to protest, yes. We begin Sunday. Next Sunday, we have a good meeting, a bigger meeting to protest. We are preparing good meeting next Sunday. All the opposition parties, yes.
Guy Kifuchi-Aromi is the president of the Union for Democracy and Republic Party of Congo, Brazzaville. He was speaking with me from the capital, Brazzaville. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Thursday, September 24th. Daybreak Africa time, 17 and a half minutes past the hour. South Sudan government spokesman Michael McQuay says President Salva Kiir did not issue threats against Sudan People's Liberation Movement Secretary General Pagan Amum for signing the compromise peace agreement in Addis Ababa last month. But McQuay says the ruling SPLM party is disappointed with Amum for signing the peace agreement on behalf of the former detainees. McQuay also said Amum's membership in the ruling SPLM is in doubt.
What I stated, this is what was also stated by His Excellency the President, that there is no way the SPLM would continue to be one again. It will not be one again because the chairman, who is President Salva Kiir, deputy chairman, who is the rebel leader, Riek Machar, and the secretary general, who is Pagan Amum, three of them have signed the agreement, and there are three separate entities. There is nothing that will bring them again together under one umbrella called the SPLM. So what we are saying is that he will not be the secretary general again, not him alone, but he and others will no longer be members of the party, but they are free to come and set up their own political party. However, we have never threatened anybody, and if he has any threats that he believes that we have stated, then let him produce them.
Does this mean Pagan is officially dismissed from the party?
This is what is being said now, but officially the party, up to now, the party leadership did not to determine that. This is very clear from the talk of His Excellency the President in his last address to the nation, in which he said the SPLM will not be the same again.
Pagan was giving reasons that he said the party is being hijacked by a group he's referring to as Jain Council of Elders. What do you know about that group?
These are issues which are being concocted, being created by him, because this Jain Council of Elders is a social entity which has nothing to do with the government or with the political party. It is a Jain Community Elders Council, which comprises of elders from different political parties and different political denominations. It has nothing to do with the SPLM as such, and it should be made to understand it that way. We are members of the SPLM and will continue to be members of the SPLM. It is those who have abandoned the SPLM like him who would talk of hijack. Why did he decide to abandon the SPLM? And now he talks of the SPLM being hijacked.
He said the party is now controlled by one tribe, and he was very categorically clear that it is the Genk elders who are controlling the party.
I'm sorry, I think you must have been misinformed. And what I'm telling you is the clear thing, and you can check it on that. The acting secretary general now is not a Genk, for your information.
The South Sudan government spokesman, Michael McQuay, speaking with John Tanza of VOA South Sudan in Focus program. Zimbabwe's Constitutional Court on Wednesday declared unconstitutional a section of the Criminal Procedure and Evidence Act that gave prosecutors the power to overrule judges and magistrates when they had freed suspects on bail. Thomas Juripasi has details from Harare.
The full bench of the Constitutional Court ruled that Section 121 of the Criminal Procedure and Evidence Act violated the constitutional rights of suspects who would have been freed on bail. The act allowed prosecutors to invoke the section, overriding decisions of judges and magistrates that would result in suspects who would have been granted bail to remain behind bars for at least 7 days to give the state a chance to appeal the judge's decision. Chief Justice Godfrey Chijikausiku said the full bench of the Constitutional Court was unanimous in declaring the section unconstitutional. The ruling followed an application filed by MDCT activist Fanny Okamurendo and three others following their arrest in 2013 for allegedly tearing posters in Chitungwiza bearing the faces of President Robert Mugabe and the late retired Army General Solomon Mujuru, one of the applicant's lawyers. Kudzai Kadzere of the Zimbabwe Lawyers for Human Rights confirmed the court's ruling, describing it as landmark. Kadzere told VOA Studio 7 that the effect of the ruling is that from today onwards, no suspects would continue to be incarcerated if they are freed by the courts.
We're happy that with the immediate effect that section is no longer operational, and we note with pleasure that it is a section that has previously been used and abused by the state, particularly targeting those in opposition, as well as several other innocent civilian individuals who have been locked up unnecessarily, even after having been granted bail by a magistrate.
Morgan Komichi, the deputy chairperson of the MDC formation led by former Prime Minister Morgan Tsvangirai, said his party welcomed the court's decision to strike the section of the country's statutes, saying that several members of his party have fallen victim to the unconstitutional provision of the law. Reporting from Harare, this is Thomas Chiripasi.
Asia has long been known as a destination for tourists to ride elephants, but an animal rights group says the practice is spreading to Africa and that it is cruel and inhumane. The group says although the elephants may look happy for tourists, behind the scenes, their treatment is abusive. From Austin, Texas, VOA Southern Africa correspondent Anita Powell looks at this new trend.
Of the 2,000 elephants around the world being used for entertainment, some 200 are in Africa, and that number is growing. Increasingly, African elephants are being used in Southern Africa's burgeoning tourist industry. Kate Neustadt, Director of Wildlife for World Animal Protection, says these elephants' lives are miserable.
In Africa in particular, the elephants are much bigger, particularly the males. They just thought they were going to be untrainable. Even the level of abuse that's given to the Asian elephants to make them more compliant to them, that they would never be able to achieve that in Africa, but actually they have, and they're using the same kind of training methods and techniques to get the elephants to perform in the same way there.
At several Johannesburg area elephant sanctuaries, a 10-minute elephant ride can cost about $35. That means that in a day, an obliging elephant out-earns the average South African. VOA News was unable to get comment from some of South Africa's more prominent sanctuaries, although some have previously disputed allegations of mistreatment and say they only use positive training methods. Neustadt says elephant training can be brutal.
They're taken, you know, sometimes months old from their mothers, and when they're very young, juvenile elephants, they go through what's called the crush, and in this they're trapped in a small cage tied up with ropes so they can't move. And there are things called ball hooks that elephant trainers use, and they beat the elephants with these until they have sores and terrible markings that appear, and sometimes infections get into them. And when they're going through this, and it can be for up to a week's time, and they're poking them with sticks, hitting them with whips and wooden batons as well, until the elephant spirit actually breaks.
The practice is legal, she says, meaning customers have to weigh in with their wallets. Anita Powell, VOA News, Austin, Texas.
It's time now for Daybreak Africa. Sponsor here is Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Very good Thursday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa sports news, we begin with athletics. Ugandan distance runner Solomon Mutai was crowned the Uganda Sports Press Association USPA Personality of the Month for August in Kampala, Uganda. Mutai earned the accolade after clinching a bronze medal in men's marathon on the opening day of the World Athletics Championships in Beijing, China last month. In volleyball, Africa's campaign at the World Men's Volleyball Championships ended on a sour note as Iran dismissed Egypt in straight sets, and Canada beat Tunisia in a similar fashion in Tokyo, Japan on Wednesday. However, Egypt has something to cheer as Ahmed Abdelhay was named the tournament's top scorer with 230 points and Badawi Mohamed Monim was named the best receiver with 58.62%. The champions United States of America and runners-up Italy qualify for the 2016 Rio de Janeiro Olympics, while Poland are bronze medalists. Turning to rugby, Namibia face a baptism of fire when they challenge world champions New Zealand in their opening match of their campaign at the Rugby World Cup at the Olympic Stadium in London, England, today, Thursday. The Namibians and South Africa are the only teams from Africa at the 20-nation contest. In South Africa, African champions South Africa are seeded in Group A for the Africa Women's Olympic Rugby Sevens qualifier due to start in Johannesburg on Saturday. Namibia, Uganda, Zimbabwe, and Zambia are also in Group A. Kenya is seeded in Group B, which also features Botswana, Madagascar, Senegal, and Tunisia. The top three teams at the two-day contest stand the best chance of playing at the Rio de Janeiro Olympics next year. Moving on to football, FIFA Women's Under-20 World Cup silver medalists, the Nigeria Falconets, travel to Kinshasa to play the Democratic Republic of Congo in the first leg of their 2016 Under-20 World Cup qualifier on Saturday. Elsewhere, Burkina Faso host Ethiopia, Zambia welcome South Africa, and Ghana travel to Equatorial Guinea. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a good day. Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. Egypt's President Abdel Fattah el-Sisi on Wednesday pardoned 100 prisoners, including two Al Jazeera journalists sentenced for allegedly creating false news. Canadian reporter Mohamed Fakhmi said he is happy and vowed to continue to fight for press freedom in Egypt. Burkina Faso's interim president regained control of the country again on Wednesday, a week after a military general and his supporters overthrew him and his transitional government. Interim President Michel Kafando and Prime Minister Yacouba Isaac Zeda marked their return to power in an official handover ceremony in the capital, Ouagadougou. That is it for this Thursday, September 24th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as post editor Mark Ullman, along with our engineer Jim Harriman, I'm James Butters saying, have a lovely day.
The lyrics could be French,
English,
Portuguese,
Bantu,
Arabic, etc.
It is the beat.
The African beat that counts.
The beat does all the translations.
It cuts across all languages and gives us the understanding that this is the African beat.
It is so distinct.
And adhesive.
It binds us together.
African beat on The Voice of America. Mondays through Fridays, 0900 and 2000 Universal Time.
With David Bandy.
Everyone is looking for something special when maybe they should just listen instead. The VOA's African Music Mix will soothe your nerves and calm your head. Tune in from 0 to 300 UTC and 1100 to 1300 hours UTC to make you feel good. So treat yourself to that something special.